Okay, well, let's go ahead and begin. I'm Lucy Duncan. I serve AFSC as the Director of Friends Relations. And we have on the call Dilit Baum, who is the Director of Economic Activism for AFSC, and who founded the organization with some other people, Who Profits, which is an organization which has done a lot of research about who has profited from the occupation of Palestinian land, and Steve Tamari, who is a Palestinian Quaker. And Steve, you're going to need to tell me your title as a professor, and he also serves on the steering committee with me for the Quaker Palestine Israel Network. And they're going to share some information, and then we'll leave lots of time for questions and comments. But before we do that, we'd like to hear the voices. So, Dilit and Steve, why don't you just say something, and then I'll invite people to introduce themselves.
This is Steve, and I'm glad. Thank you, Lucy, for organizing this. And I'm happy to be here with Dilit and all our guests. Is there anything else you wanted me to say?
Anything else you want that's important?
No, I'm happy to be here, and I'm excited about Quaker involvement in the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. And I think it's an exciting time. That's enough.
Hi, and this is Dilit. I'm also grateful for this opportunity organized by Lucy, and I'm glad that we'll have this time to talk about things we can do and how to do them.
Great, wonderful. So there are a number of people on the call, and we just want to do this very briefly so that we can spend a lot of time listening and sharing information. But I would like for people to just say their name and the meeting and very briefly the involvement you have with Israel-Palestine or a question that you have, whichever you feel led to put into the space. And we'll just need to do that really quickly. So just type up and go ahead and share.
My name is Beth Kaiser. I'm calling from Black Mountain, North Carolina. I'm part of Swannanoa Valley Friends Meeting and also Western Carolinian for Peace and Justice in the Middle East. And we've been very active. We recently had Ali Abonema here speaking and at the Veterans for Peace Conference in late July. And we just finished a benefit for Gaza that raised a couple of $1,000s, and we're trying to figure out what our next focus is, and we're thinking about children in detention.
Great, thank you. Welcome. Okay, go ahead. Somebody else?
Yeah, my name is Eleanor Yam, and I'm from Burlington Meeting, and I think I'm in somewhat a unique position among other Quakers in the sense that I'm Jewish by birth, and I have a lot of family and friends in Israel. I'm obviously extremely upset about what's happening in Gaza, but I'm sick about the whole thing. So, anyway, that's where I'm coming from.
Thank you for joining.
Hello. Yep. Ray from outside of Philadelphia, member of Central Philadelphia Monthly Meeting and Philadelphia Yearly Meeting, and I'm the clerk of the Philadelphia Yearly Meeting Middle East Working Group. I've lived 3 different years in Beirut and Ramallah and Beirut again.
Welcome.
Charles Simpson, the Burlington, Vermont monthly meeting.
Can you speak up just a little bit?
Yeah, Charles Simpson, Burlington, Vermont monthly meeting.
This is Ann Liska, also from Burlington, Vermont. We just minuted on the Gaza, I should say on the Palestine-Israel issue at our recent business meeting, and we'll be circulating that minute.
Oh, wonderful. Great.
I'm Joanne Chesler.
Go ahead,
I'm Joanne Sharpless from Germantown Monthly Meeting.
Anything about the involvement of the meeting or a question you have?
Well, I want to see that minute from Burlington when it's right there.
Who still hasn't introduced themselves?
This is Brian Hall with Anne Hall. We're from the Ditchling meeting in Sussex, England. We're currently located in Kelowna, Canada. Nice to meet you all.
Mm. Welcome.
Great.
Anyone else? Great. All right, well, welcome, and I'm glad that you can join us. I wanted to say again that we're recording the call so that we can share it with others. So Steve is going to start us off with a little bit of history, particularly history of resistance, and then we'll move on from there. So go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Lucy, and thanks to all of you for joining us on this. Lucy asked me to do a little history background, and that was quite an order given how long this situation has been going on. And I was trying to, and I realized that many of you have significant background, so I was trying to think of some way to approach this that would be, relevant but not repeat sort of the basic information that everybody already has. So I thought I would talk about some stages in Palestinian resistance and how these have led up to the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, and say a little bit about that, and then Dalit will talk in much more detail about BDS and about Hewlett-Packard in particular. So you probably know this, but I think it's worth starting out with the idea that things really begin in 1948 with the dispersal of the Palestinian people from the vast majority of them being dispersed from their homeland in 1948. And then another important date, I think, is 1967. And I think these two, as a result of the events of these 2 years, we basically have three different Palestinian populations, those living inside Israel proper, those living in the remaining territories of historic Palestine, the West Bank and Gaza, which have been under Israeli occupation since 1967, and then, of course, the people of the diaspora scattered around the Middle East and beyond. And I think all Palestinians at some level dream about returning to their homeland, but they have thought about how to deal with their situation using different political strategies. And some of these depend on the times and also whether they are inside Israel or in the occupied territories or in the diaspora. But I think if we look at the period from the 1950s to the present, there are some patterns in the changes in strategies and who was in leadership among Palestinians who are resisting occupation or dealing with the fact that they had been, made refugees. So in the very first period, there really was no Palestinian resistance. Basically, the Arab states sort of took on the job of leading the demand for Palestinian rights. But in the 1960s, particularly after 1967, the PLO and the different factions of the Palestinian political spectrum led resistance efforts, and I think their efforts were primarily of the military sort, right? This is the age of the Fedayi, the resistance fighter, most of them in the diaspora trying to infiltrate either the occupied territories or Israel itself. The PLO became a people inside the West Bank and Gaza in particular, became disenchanted with the PLO by the late 1980s. And that's when you see the Intifada, the first Intifada, starting. And as a result of that, the PLO on the outside in that diaspora was very much, sort of sidelined. The center of gravity of Palestinian politics became inside the territories. And, that really forced the PLO to, approach the situation from a much more diplomatic, orientation and ultimately to, strike a deal with Israel and the U.S. that would allow them to return to the occupied territories in the guise of the Palestinian Authority. And so those diplomatic efforts on the part of the PLO led to ultimately to the Oslo Accords and to the settlement with Israel in 1993. And for, you know, that was a period in which a lot of Palestinians thought things were getting better. But by 2000, the PLO and the Palestinian Authority had been discredited. Nothing had happened really on the ground to change the situation. And so you have the outbreak of the second Intifada, which, unlike the first Intifada, was very much was much more violent. Was Hamas became sort of took on the role of leader of the resistance. And that's where we were by the mid-2000s. And then in 2005, West Bank, Gaza, civil society, folks, organizations, grassroots group organizations took the leadership and started of the sort of the popular movement and started this another stage of nonviolent resistance with the call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions in 2005, which was meant really to pressure Israel by appealing to popular opinion, particularly in Europe and North America, where Israel, you know, the areas where Israel, that Israel depends on most for its international support. And this phase of nonviolent resistance has really, I think, borne fruit in a way that military resistance and diplomatic efforts on the part of the PLO never really did before, at least in terms of capturing the imagination and the support of people in Europe and North America. So in the last less than 10 years, the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement has made considerable achievements within the U.S. itself. You know, you may be familiar with some of these. And just this year, the Presbyterians voted to divest from three companies, including Hewlett-Packard, HP. Financial institutions like the TIAA CREF, you know, demoted Caterpillar from its social investments, socially responsible investments. BDS has become a big deal on university campuses. Just the other day, UCLA student body voted to support divestment of the university. So I think this is a very exciting stage in the whole history of Palestinian resistance, and it's one that I think has really caught on, particularly in the United States, in a way that other efforts haven't. So I think it's important to see it in that context of one more strategy by Palestinians to deal with the situation of dispossession and occupation. And in supporting it, I think we are really taking our cue from Palestinians in a way that maybe wasn't the case beforehand. So I think I'll just stop there with and I think Dalit can say more about what BDS really means and the particular place of HP, Hewlett-Packard, in that situation.
Yeah.
Great, thanks. Go ahead, Dalit.
Yeah. I actually like it because we are very well connected here.
Yeah.
I myself got to the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement through my involvement in the Israeli peace movement. And in the early 2000s, we were invited to actually join demonstrations, nonviolent demonstrations organized by Palestinian popular committees in the villages against the wall that was being built in the West Bank. And so for me, the call for boycott, divestment, sanctions comes from the same people, from the same organizers and leadership that grew out of these nonviolent demonstrations in the villages. That was very much nonpartisan and totally grassroots, and embodied for me the true meaning of nonviolence, because it also called upon Israelis, not just Americans or people around the world, but also called upon the enemy to join them and made us non-enemies, made us partners in a joint struggle. The call itself is very vague if you read it. You can go and read it online, bdsmovement.net, bdsmovement.net. And it just says use such tools until Israel complies with international standards of human rights and international laws. And when we come to figure out what to do, what is the actual actions that we should take, because this is a call for action, so the response has to be action, what we did was to, I say we as kind of the Queen of England, I'm meaning like everybody, it's a global movement. All around the world we see campaigns that target big corporations and institutions that are part of the infrastructure of support for the Israeli policies. So the analysis that underlies the BDS movement is that what we see in Israel today is a result of tremendous support from the outside. It is support in technologies, it is support in money, it's support in diplomatic support, and our goal is to try and put a dent in that ongoing immense impunity and support. And since we cannot, I mean, we want to, but so far we could not stop the U.S. government support of Israel, which is one of the main reasons this is ongoing and getting worse, what we can do is around us. What can we do as consumers to stop supporting what is going on over there? What can we do as investors to stop supporting what is going on over there? So we're really talking about the nonviolent tools of non-cooperation. And that will respond also to many of the claims made against BDS to try and silence and stigmatize and close down our efforts. BDS does not stem from hatred or anti-Semitism or trying to keep away from Israel or try and keep our hands clean from Israeli goods. It's just the opposite. Just on the contrary, we are here in the United States. We try and trace our own accountability to what is going on over there. And we are accountable. I am accountable as an Israeli, but we are all accountable because the world is a small place. And through that accountability, we're trying to make a difference. So it's non-punitive. It's not that we boycott a company because we want to punish it. We boycott a company as part of a larger campaign in a Gandhian boycott whose goal is to get heard, to be heard, to become part of the conversation, to influence that corporate policies, to tell that company that there is also a price to pay on the other side of the profit from the occupation, and that we are trying to get them to step away from that immoral and illegal business. So this is just really in a nutshell. I'll just give you two examples. And the first one, of course, is SodaStream. I think many of us were involved in the campaign against SodaStream. SodaStream is this funny device to make soda at home. And at some point, last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was a big, hot, new thing, especially around the holidays. And SodaStream is it's an American company, but the main production site is in an illegal settlement in the occupied West Bank. And so the boycotts against SodaStream were just a part from a campaign around the world to get people to know where this device is being made and how are the Palestinian workers being treated in that place. What does it mean to employ people that have absolutely no civil rights? How can they have labor rights if they have no civil rights? And so on. Many of you probably have heard of the great success in getting to mainstream media through their the presenter that kind of publicized SodaStream, Scarlett Johansson, the actress, who was also an ambassador for Oxfam, and she had to resign from Oxfam over that. So that got a lot of publicity. And what we hear about in the last few months is that the share price for SodaStream has dropped tremendously, something like it was cut in 50%, and that SodaStream has announced it is planning to move away from its plant in the West Bank. So the campaign is not over, and the boycott is not over, because nothing has happened still. But you can see how we want this to work. It is not the first company to announce it will step away from its occupation business. We see that happening very quickly with these campaigns. Many of these companies just don't want to be involved in such controversial business in a small part of the world, which is not very profitable as well. Our biggest campaign now, or the one that I feel most close to, is our campaign to target Hewlett-Packard. Now, Hewlett-Packard is a huge corporation. It is not just a soda company. And their involvement in the occupation also is very multifaceted. They have a lot of business in Israel, and a lot of business specifically with the Israeli military. They are the main providers to the Israeli military of servers and computers and PCs. So if you see a military outpost or a checkpoint anywhere, they will use HP computers. This is just one level of involvement. They also have some facilities in settlements, which I think is very silly of them, but they probably don't care. The main involvement is in their business as providing information technologies to governments and police departments, to the Department of Homeland Security in this country, to prisons in this country, as well as in Israel-Palestine. And they specialize in maintaining and managing information systems to manage big populations, such as in prisons. And the entire ID system, the entire population registry in Israel-Palestine, which is managed by Israel, is actually managed by Hewlett-Packard. They are the active managers of it. And what it means is that all the IDs that all Israelis and Palestinians are required to carry at all times by law are actually produced by a system managed by Hewlett-Packard. And these IDs are stratified by ethnicity and nationality, and they serve as the main tool of segregation, discrimination, and control over people based on their ethnicity. And that's true inside Israel, where people carry these IDs, but also in the occupied territories, also in Gaza. Anyone born in Gaza has to apply for an ID from Israel. Israel controls the population registry, or else people will never be able to leave Gaza or get any kind of permit. Israel controls all of it. All of the population restrictions on movement in the West Bank are also managed by the same system. And at some time, HP also provided the checkpoints with a specific system for checking biometric identification cards for Palestinians. So this is their complicity, and we are asking them to step away from that business. That's what we're asking them to do. And in order to do that, we have tried talking to them and meeting them. When that didn't work, they canceled the last meeting. We also divested from them. The American Friends Service Committee and the Friends Fiduciary Corporations both divested from Hewlett-Packard. We have ally groups like the Presbyterians that just divested from Hewlett-Packard. We have organized demonstrations outside their headquarters. There were 3 this last summer. We have also launched a boycott campaign, so people can go online and see there are two main websites, Stop HP and HP Boycott. Both of them are two different coalitions in California, one in Northern California, one in Southern California. It is a California company. Asking people to boycott them, trying to get at contracts that they have, or ask also stores to de-shelf these products and not sell HP products. I think the campaign at this stage, because this is such a big company, is really at the educational level. We are trying to get more people to hear about this company and what it does. We're trying to get more people around the country to understand that Hewlett-Packard does not sell only printers and computers, that more than 50% of their revenues today come from security and homeland security and such surveillance services. This is no longer just a printer company. So this is our main campaign. And also I have one little piece of news from our work with the American Friends Service Committee. And I'm really excited about that because this is a project we've been working on for 2 years now, and it has just launched this last Friday. And it is a website, and everybody is invited to go check it out. The website is, the URL for the website is afsc.org and then /investigate. So the name of the tool is Investigate, and it's on the American Friends website. So go to afsc.org and then /investigate. What this website does, it allows each and every one of us to scan investment files or lists of holdings that you might have personally or that you might have as part of an organization or a group or a school. It also allows you to see what you're invested in or see what this specific list of holdings holds in the way of specific companies and how these specific companies are complicit in specific issues and projects as part of the Israeli occupation, specific human rights violations. And then it gives you information as to what you can do. One option is to drop this stock, but sometimes you cannot do that, and sometimes it's too much to ask. So people can join a specific campaign, or they can call the company as an investor and ask to put pressure on them and ask them to stop doing what they're doing. And we also give information about what other investors have done, which investors have engaged with them publicly. We don't know everything, but what we know, we try to put there, as well as a list of suggested divestment targets, the companies that are really lost causes that we have tried engaging with, that have not responded to anything, and that we think are just to be divested from, are not a good investment. So you can see all of that information online where I said it's the first time this information is online. It's quite a unique tool. It's brand new, so if you come and figure out that there are some bugs or problems, please, please, please let us know. I'm sure there are many. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Dalit. I was going to just say a few more things about what Quakers have been doing. In terms of BDS and this movement, although Dalit has covered some of this already, as she mentioned, the Friends Fiduciary Corporation, which holds investments for many Quaker institutions and organizations, divested from several companies in recent years. I can't remember exactly what the date was.
2012, I think.
2012. And then earlier, actually, the AFSC began implementing a investment screen targeting corporations that provide products or services for the Israeli military. I think that was renewed more recently, 2011. No, in 2011, AFSC joined a the We Divest campaign, which calls on TIAA-CREF to divest from Israeli companies that profit from the Israeli occupation. So those are two major Quaker institutions that are at the forefront of the BDS campaign, along with other churches and nonprofit organizations in the country. I just want to make a plug for a relatively young organization that Lucy and I are involved in. That's QPIN, the Quaker Palestine Israel Network. And you can find us at qpinblog.wordpress.com. And there we have some resources for you. We have a list of five things that Quakers can do in terms of this particular focus on HP. We have some links to the petition that – one of the petitions, anyway, that Dalit mentioned. We have some links to resources on information about HP's connection to the Israeli military. We have a sample minute that monthly meetings might consider related to this boycott effort. And we're going to put up some ideas for the holidays for ways in which people can protest in a, I don't know, a joyful way somehow. Music, you know, lyrics for Christmas tunes related to the HP boycott. And then QPIN, if you go to our blog there, you can sign up to get updates from us about this effort. And also we are happy to answer questions or to provide support in any way we can for individuals or meetings that are interested in joining this effort. And then I guess I would amplify what Dalit said about this new tool that AFSC has come up with, the screening, what do you call it, the investigate anyway, which allows individuals to determine how, you know, what their investments or what certain companies, how certain companies are involved in human rights violations. I looked up Hewlett-Packard, and probably all the information you need is right there, including very up-to-date news on investor activism. So I don't have a lot more to say right now about Quakers. I think Quakers are on the forefront of these efforts, and I hope you'll join us.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks, Dalit. I would add, yes, that French fiduciary, I think, was the first, maybe with the AFSC, was the first religious organization to divest. Is that right? I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that also that not only can you look at your portfolio individually, you can also do that for your meeting if your meeting has holdings in any of these companies. So we're going to open it up for questions and comments and dialogue. And there are about 15 of you on the line. But just if you want to say something, just go ahead and speak. You can, if you want to, you can mute yourself by doing *6 or unmute yourself by doing *7 if you need to do that, although it's been fairly quiet, so there hasn't been very much background noise. But if you have any questions, we'd love to hear, or stories that you'd like to make. So feel free to ask.
I have a question for Dalit, I think. The initiative to educate about HP, how would you prioritize that with the continued pressure to boycott SodaStream. Do you see one of those as more timely coming into the holiday season? Would you think, you know, a banner for both of them? We've been very active in the SodaStream boycott in past holiday seasons and have a good banner and so on. A lot of people will think that SodaStream is finished in terms of, you know, they're moving out. Well, they're not really moving out.
Yeah.
So what do you personally think in terms of the priorities here?
I think it has to be a local decision. Both campaigns are as crucial right now. I think the fact that SodaStream announced something doesn't mean that the campaign is over. It means it has to be amplified, because this is where we are actually making a difference and showing our power. So it's very important to follow through. And HP also is in a crucial moment, because the company has just announced a split. They are going to split into two different companies next year, and we still don't know which of the two companies will hold the contract in Palestine. So we see that as a kind of a reorganization of the company that we might be able to affect if we are noticed. So in both cases, this is a crucial time for the campaign.
How do we get noticed by HP if we're not boycotting printers? Are you thinking of boycotting the products that people are buying and associate with HP?
Yeah, so the thing with boycotts is that what crossed the SodaStream campaign into the mainstream was the publicity about the actress Scarlett Johansson. Yep. You have to build some kind of buzz. You have to get more and more people involved. You have to start costing them contracts and then look for opportunities to cross over to the mainstream media. So there is no way, there is no magic here. We cannot plan it in advance. We just have to do as much as we can. But the serious thing is that anyone can participate in a boycott by not buying something. But what we want from local groups is to do a little bit more. So we want them to look around and look for good targets. So when you were picketing about SodaStream, you were probably picketing a store that sells SodaStream, I assume.
Yeah.
So maybe the store also sells HP, or maybe not. Maybe the store as a target, you should assess how doable is it. Will they actually drop SodaStream?
Yeah.
So the idea is
we haven't achieved that. We've just gotten a lot of publicity.
So the idea is to really look for doable things and low-hanging fruits and see if we can actually influence local policy in a certain place. And if it's SodaStream or HP, it's just the local decision based on who is selling them around you and can you influence them. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
The other thing I would add is that there's been one thing that's important about the HP campaign is that campaigns can have a different campaigns that are in the country of the company. So HP is American, well, and SodaStream also too, but that they can have a big impact. So that's also another important reason to participate in the HP campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Let me also add that this one consideration is, of course, who is selling them and can you influence them, as I said. And then what Lucy said right now about the locality. But also these are two very different targets. When you talk to people in the streets about SodaStream, you educate them about settlements.
Yes.
But some of them have not heard about SodaStream. Hewlett-Packard, people have heard of. It's a very well-known company, and it's everywhere, and people have their products. So what you do when you talk about Hewlett-Packard is you educate them about how big high-tech companies are now complicit in warfare and occupation. And they are complicit not just in Palestine, but in this country as well, in the prison industrial complex, in immigration control. So it's also a way to organize across issues.
Good. Thanks.
And also I wanted to mention that the Leaf has written a blog post, some of you may have seen it, which is about HP, but it's also about Polaroid, which played a parallel role in South Africa. And so that's a very good resource, a good education resource for people. Are there other questions or comments?
Would anybody like to say something about Amy Hell?
Can you say that again?
Would anyone like to say something about Intel?
Intel.
I-N-T-E-L.
Yeah. I can say a word about Intel. We at the American Friends Service Committee have endorsed a version of BDS that tries to influence corporate policies. And specifically, we target first companies that are complicit in grave human rights violations and violations of international law and settlements and the occupation. Intel is a company that has a lot of business in Israel. They have a big production department in Israel. They are not in the settlements, and they are not specifically working with the Israeli military, and they are not complicit in any specific projects of the Israeli occupation. Another thing about Intel is that it's not really a company that you can use to build a successful boycott campaign, because people don't usually buy Intel products directly. They have Intel components inside their computers. So Intel is really not a boycott target. And as I said, BDS is not about boycotting anything Israeli or anything that has to do with Israel, obviously. Otherwise, I wouldn't be on this call because I am an Israeli product. But it is about picking specific strategic campaigns in order to educate the public, in order to redraw some principles, some red lines about what we can and cannot do, about delineating our accountability in order to get institutions and corporations to step away from their accountability. So even though this is economic activism and we are targeting corporations, the effect of the work we're doing is mostly symbolic and educational. It's powerful because it is about corporations and money, but it is still an educational process.
Would you like to say anything about Kiryat Gat?
What about Kiryat? It's a nice place. I've been there.
Kiryat Gat. And where is it?
Kiryat Gat is in the south of Israel. It's inside 1948 Israel. Most of the area inside 1948 Israel, which is the, what is called like a proper Israel or something like that, most of this area has been the home of over 700 different localities of Palestinian towns and villages that were totally erased in the war of 1948. And refugees were sent out and never allowed to return until this very day, and you probably know about the Palestinian refugee population. It's the biggest refugee population in the world. Kiryat Gat is an Israeli development town. It is also built over the site of, I think, more than one such Palestinian towns. And you can say that for almost each and every place. And I grew up in Israel in a town called Kiryat Ono. Kiryat Ono, my hometown, was also built in the area or next door to a Palestinian village that was totally erased. I grew up, I never even heard about it. So it's part of the history of the land and the wounds of the land. I think Kiryat Gat is where the big Intel factory is. So in the campaigns targeting Intel, people mentioned the fact that it is built in the site, next to a site, near a site of where a Palestinian town used to be. But you can say that about each and every place in the state of Israel. This is a fact. This is a fact. So you can say that about Intel. I think that in the next phase, it is important to notice which companies have a lot of business in Israel and which companies produce in Israel, just like we did with South Africa. But just like we did with South Africa, at this stage, it's important to show how business with the Israeli government around specific projects of the occupation should bear a price, that it's not just profiteering. It's not enough to just allow companies to go out there and make money off exploited labor and stolen land and and so on, that there should be a public price to pay for it. And I think we have been very successful in showing it. So we are focusing on these companies as our first tier of campaigns.
I guess I would add, too, about HP is that movement of populations is really at the heart of what the – or controlling populations and restricting movement of populations is at the heart of how the occupation works, especially these days. And so HP's role in managing populations and keeping track of individuals through the ID system and the population registry, which extends, as Dalit said, into the West Bank and the Gaza. It's not the Palestinian Authority that has control over the population registry, even in, you know, places like Ramallah that are technically under Palestinian Authority rule. Israel controls that information and it manages to do that, is able to do that through the technology provided by a company like HP. So it really gets at the heart of what living under occupation is like. And I think there is also a growing movement, Lucy might have something to say about this, among Palestinians to focus on the freedom of movement as a human right.
Yeah, and Dalit probably can talk about this too, that when I was in Israel and Palestine in May and went to Gaza, and AFSC's work is right now with youth in the Palestine program is focused on creating cohesion across 1948 Palestine, West Bank and Gaza and as it proceeds with the greater refugee population around the world, and the real goal of that program was to create cohesion because there were all these people had different Palestinians in different places had ideas about each other, and there was just a real sense that there needed to be more cohesion. So that was the goal. But after the second meeting, the Palestinian youth created a freedom of movement campaign, which is continuing and of their own. And so the work that we're doing on the HP boycott is connected to a campaign that Palestinians are working on within Israel and Palestine. Mm-hmm. Are there other questions or comments?
Can you say anything about the emphasis on children in detention that was part of a fundraiser for AFSC in Chicago, I think, this past weekend, that focus?
The AFSC program in Chicago has launched or is part of a coalition that launched a campaign focusing on child detention. And I think the slogan is no way to treat a child.
Yes.
And the idea is to really focus on what Israel does with incarcerating children and the technologies as well as the systems of control surrounding that mechanism.
So it would be easy to make the link with HP.
Yeah. Definitely. There are, in fact, two campaigns that are connected with that issue, and both are companies that provide technologies to the Israeli prison system. And one is Hewlett-Packard that is providing all of the servers and the population control technologies and databases, as we said, and the other one is G4S. That's another company, and G4S that sells, it's known in this country mainly for providing security services. They provide all the guards security services to Bank of America, for example, but also many other institutions. But they also manage prisons such as juvenile detention halls. They operate juvenile detention halls here in this country and in many other countries. And they also do all the transportation services for ICE. so they do the deportations across the U.S.-Mexico border. They have their own detention facilities holding people prior to deportation. It's a seriously problematic business they are involved in.
Right. So that seems equally vulnerable and strategic, doesn't it?
Yes, of course. There is a deforest campaign globally.
Uh-huh.
And the idea of that campaign is to get institutions to stop hiring deforests as security guards. It was very successful in many countries. They have just left Norway altogether following such a campaign. They lost many big substantial contracts because of their involvement in Palestine. And just like SodaStream, they have announced that they will pull back from some of their business in the occupation, but they haven't yet.
Uh-huh.
I think Friends of Sabil North America, which is an organization in this country that works with Palestinian Christians, has launched a campaign against G4S. So it's worthwhile to look around in your community and see if you see their logo. If you see that they work in your community somewhere, they might make a good target.
And would they be on the new website, Investigate?
Yeah, Investigate is a website that includes all of the publicly traded companies that have any kind of connection, as far as we know, to the occupation.
Yeah. So we could learn a lot about G4S there.
I hope so, yes. And
good.
You can also use Who Profits. That's actually the source, the main source of our information, whoprofits.org. They have written a whole report about that company.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
I have a question. We know in the...
I think somebody's asking a question, but they can't hear.
Yeah, is there somebody asking? Do you want to speak up?
Yeah, Charles Simpson. Yeah, I was interested about the connection between the U.S. military complex and the Israeli military complex. You know, for example, that the helmets being produced for the F-35 apparently are Israeli technology. We know that there's kind of a cross-fertilization in the area of drones. I'm wondering whether you can specify what kind of companies are particularly culpable in this area.
Okay, I think I've heard.
Did you hear that, Dalit?
Yeah, I think I, correct me if I
might be good to repeat it.
So the question was about the connections with the U.S. military complex, and specifically you mentioned Elbit Systems, I think. Would that Am I correct?
Lockheed Martin. Right.
Lockheed Martin. Yeah. So the military companies are covered in our new tool, but they pose a whole new problem because, of course, we cannot boycott them because we don't buy their stuff. And I don't think we can even divest from them because the people we work with and the ethical investors that we talk to are not invested in them to begin with. So to begin with, this is an industry that doesn't listen to us, doesn't talk to us, doesn't care what we think. It's not like Hewlett Packard that wants to sell us something. They are useful to us in a way of educating people about connections between things. For example, Elbit Systems is such a company. You know, of course, that Israel receives about $3 billion a year in U.S. military aid for weapons. And that money mostly stays in the U.S., mostly goes to the U.S. military complex, and what Israel receives are the weaponry, are the weapons. So what it means is that many Israeli weapons producers actually register and open up companies in the U.S. when they want to sell to the Israeli military because they want to use the money from the U.S. military aid, which goes only or mostly, I think, three-quarters of it stay in this country. So Elbit Systems is such a company. They have registered as a U.S. company for that reason. And their specialty are military drones and all sorts of advanced electronics for weaponry. And because of their experience in building surveillance systems along the apartheid wall in the West Bank, they were recently hired to build the surveillance systems along the U.S.-Mexico border in Arizona. It's a huge contract, and they have replaced Boeing in it. And they claim that the next stage of this project will also be to install or to employ military drones along that border. So it's hard to separate the Israeli and the American military industries. They are very well integrated. The Israeli companies are usually smaller, and they specialize in specific things, and then they add them to integrated systems that are produced in this country. One way to target it, one, by the way, I just thought about it, is right here in the Bay Area where I'm located, we just had a very successful series of events called Block the Boat, where activists have marched towards the Oakland port to block the unloading of a Zim ship. Zim is the Israeli main carrier at sea. And part of the story around this protest was that Zim is also the main shipping company that ships the military supplies from the U.S. to Israel and from Israel to the U.S. So we had the support of the longshoremen who refused to unload those ships. It was very, very successful. There were five or six separate events where Zim ships were not unloaded. And, in fact, the Zim company has announced or stopped announcing any stops in our area at all. So it seems like they are staying away from the West Coast ports for a while, which is a great victory. But it's a way to educate people about the connections between these two military industries.
Great. Thank you. So it's 9:27, and I don't think we have time for another question. But if you, if any of you have additional questions, you can email me at lduncan@afsc.org, and I'll pass them along and find some more information. Please visit the Quaker Palestine Israel Network blog and page, and you'll find the resources that Steve mentioned about the HP campaign and the resources to support that there, as well as visiting the new tool, the afsc.org/investigate. There's also a series of blog posts after from May through the summer. We devoted much of Asking in Faith to post about Israel-Palestine, and I think there are a number of things there that are helpful resources about the occupation and about, obviously, there's the one about HP and Polaroid and other resources there for you.
Where is that? Sorry, Lucy. Where is that?
Sorry, that's at afsc.org/friends. And if you and if you go down the right, there's lots of topics, and there's a topic on Israel-Palestine that has the whole series of blog posts. From many
slash
people.
/friend?
Yes. Okay. afsc.org/friends.
Okay. Do you want to say anything about the pinwheel poster?
Oh, that's a good idea. So there, in addition, we have a resource to honor and mourn and make public a witness around the children, the 500 and I believe it was 23 ended up being 522 children that were killed in the bombardment in Gaza this summer, and it's a project where you buy 500 black pinwheels for each child that was killed, and put tape on each one with their names. We will give you the name if you ask us, and then you find a place outside of your meeting house or in another space to place those pinwheels, and then put some signage and let people know that this is that's the witness that you're doing. It was originally outside of Mike Merriman Lotz's house. He and his wife did it in their house. So there's lots of places you can do it. I think it's
churches. We've got one. We hope at the big cathedral in Asheville for the day they call Holy Innocents, right after Christmas. And we've already had one exhibit, one placement, and we hope we've got that one. But we hope to keep it going during the spring at
Great.
Various places. Yeah.
Great. And we also, I heard some of you say that there is a new minute that a meeting had passed. We'd love to see that. We have a collection of minutes from Quaker meetings that we publish on Acting in Faith, the blog, and we'd love to collect more of those so people have models and can be connected. And also the Quaker Palestine Israel Network is a way to be connected as well. Stephen DeLeet, is there anything else that you'd like to say before we close the call?
Keep connected and keep active.
I want to add that just from the questions, the most effective kind of action is the action that is relevant locally. So keep your eyes open, and we can try and support and help and figure out things with you. There might be something really great you can do locally that is just the right thing.
Right, and I have to say that it's very encouraging to be on a call with many people who are already engaged and involved, and that gives me hope. So I'm pleased and that you've joined the call, and we're here to support your activism as we are able. So please stay in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank
and
you.
This recording will be available, so that will be another resource that
Thank
you can
you.
Provide to others.
Mm-hmm.